Welcome to this interview as part of the series with the primary candidates. And we have Kevin, or Casey Christian. He's running for governor. Hey, thanks for coming on.
And thanks for having me.
We're grateful to have him on the Rich Urban Show here. So, can you just briefly introduce yourself to start out?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Kevin Casey Christian. I'm running in the May Republican primary for governor of West Virginia this year. I'm a native West Virginian, born in southern West Virginia, grew up in Mercer counties. Like most West Virginians, I had to take a break from West Virginia in order to afford to raise a family, and I've been back for a few years now, and I currently live in Calhoun County, West Virginia.
All right. Great. Thanks for that introduction. So what do you think the greatest problem facing West Virginia right now is, in your opinion?
I think it's undoubtedly our terrible economic position that we have. I mean, we talk about a lot of problems, and I'm not really an issues candidate like some of the other guys, because I'm not interested in putting Band-Aids on effects. I'm looking at root cause solutions. And I really think for West Virginia, that's a turnaround in our economy. I mean, we're 70 years behind on getting started on this transition, and I'm ready to go.
How do you come up with the 70 years? What started in 1950 or 55, whatever?
I think in 50, we were at top of our peak federal power. We had 6 seats in Congress. The economy was good, but then income automation into our coal fields, and it has sort of been downhill since, mostly. And we've done a poor job in the past of reacting to changing economic conditions. I think there's been a pretty bad failure of leadership in West Virginia for quite some time.
Okay. So I have a couple questions. Well. Mm-hmm. I was looking at a couple of your videos on your website, mm-hmm. and the way you are defining conservative seems to be a little different. You say, to paraphrase, and correct me, of course, if I'm wrong, being conservative mm-hmm. has nothing to do with lifestyle or culture. And do you want to dive into that a little more, like what you're saying there?
Sure. I think this is a public forum where the government must represent all people equally. So there's no way to bring in personal preference into a public forum. I mean, if you want to be socially conservative, up your holler, then right on. I support that altogether. I'm talking specifically a government public function. And I think conservative in that sense means that we should be as economically conservative with our resources that are on this earth that we all must share, that our future generations needs to survive. You know, extreme luxury now is really robbing our children of the resources they'll need when they get there. And I think that's what a real conservative is.
Okay. So, yeah, I noticed it seemed to center more on the environmental problems, which, of course, is very important.
Oh, yes.
And, Okay. Well, yeah, I might have some more questions about that a little later. But what about, I do want to ask about a couple other things. So, one thing I've been concerned about for some years now, like during the COVID debacle or whatever you want to call it, there were a lot of mandates put in place by Governor Justice, and... Yeah. I think it was in the 2021 legislature, there was a bill passed in the House to reel those in because they went on like without limit, basically, as far as time. But that was gutted by what I call the wrongly named Trump in Berkeley County, and it never passed. So presumably that could happen again. Like, would you support fixing those kind of issues where there's like a lot of mandates by the government without any real recourse by the legislature or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that was done with emergency powers from the executive branch, and those should be as short-lived as possible. I mean, the governor does need it for emergency situations, but I think it got a little out of hand. I would not support government mandates of private anything. Businesses, churches, any private entity at all, I don't support a mandate. Now it gets a little quirky in the public realm, where a government office like the military, might think that's the best thing for their soldiers. I think that's their decision too. And I also think it's the soldiers' decision not to take it if they don't want to. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we have to balance public safety and mm-hmm. personal freedom.
Okay. Well, what do you think about the vaccine mandates in West Virginia? As like, do you have children, for instance?
I do, but she's well old enough to make her own decisions.
Okay. So anyway, I'm sure you're well aware that to attend school in West Virginia right now, public school, actually a private school too, any school, unless you're homeschooling, you have to receive all the required vaccinations. I think now it's 11 totally. And parents don't have a choice unless they want to not go to school. Although in most states, they allow, exemptions for religious or sometimes conscientious reasons. What's your take on that? Should we get rid of this kind of mandates? You did mention it just a minute ago, but I want to specifically know about like vaccination choice, as it's called, or medical freedom. Should parents have the choice not to vaccinate their children?
Of course. I think parents should always have the last say in what happens to their children. Now, whether they can come to public school depends on the science and reason of the vaccines that they must take. 11 seems a little much. I took some before I could go to public school. And we don't want measles and some of those things coming back. I think it was just science did just a terrible job of communicating, what the vaccine was and how it worked and what the efficacy was. And they were so wrong about so many things. I think they lost a lot of credibility. The truth is, if that vaccine was 60% deadly, people would have been clamoring for it.
You mean the COVID jabs, or whatever you want to call them?
Right. Yeah. The recent vaccine concern. It is a concern. I mean, we didn't come together well as a society when that happened. And I think there's a lot of problems there in the leadership and the communications of how that was rolled out.
Mm-hmm. Right. So with the COVID kind of things, would you have for instance, well, that wasn't mandated for school, but as you're aware, it was mandated in many workplaces, and also it was mandated in the military, and also I believe that the number is tens of thousands refused and were dismissed. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think the fairest thing we could do is allow private entities to do whatever they like. I mean, it's America. This is a free country. It's your business. That's why it's called private. You get to make the rules as long as you're not hurting anyone. And I mm-hmm. think if a private entity thought that they should not, they don't have want their customers to be vaxxed, that's completely. And then just post it on the door. And if you want to go in there, go in there. And if you don't, don't. Like, I'm a free market guy, but government gets complicated. I mean, the military would not have given those jabs. I mean, I'm a vet, and we invest quite a bit of money in each soldier. And mm-hmm. I hate to be crass about it, but they're often looked at as an economic unit of investment. And I just found it kind of. I don't really think they were trying to hurt the soldiers, right? Like, if they thought that the vaccine was necessary for America's readiness, I mean, that's what we pay those guys for. They're the exports. I mean, did I get all the ones you were concerned with?
Yeah, I think mainly whether that was right to like dismiss all those soldiers.
Yeah, that's a sticky one. I mean, those are vets and they didn't want to take it. I think there could have been a different way to handle it. I'm not sure dismissal was warranted.
Or fire, whatever they were. I think they were, Well, I'm not sure the exact status. I'm pretty sure, though, they won't, you know, unless they change something, they won't get their benefits or whatever.
Right. Yeah. That's that seems like a serious reaction to someone. I guess you surrender your personal freedom when you join something as a vet, because you have to do extraordinarily anti-selfish things for people you may not even know. So I get that, but I mean, there's also a personal freedom aspect of it's your body, right? We're not talking about property. We're talking about your being.
Okay. All right. So I wanted to jump back to or talk more about, like, I was watching your stump speech. So, and you can maybe explain it more yourself. So, but I noticed it's you were talking about the, you know, kind of what some people call the oligarchy or the 1%. Oligarchy is maybe the wrong word, but who own a lot of property, which is true. But what I was trying to figure out is what you were advocating, like you were saying, and, you know, please bring it out in your own words, but just from what I'm picked up. And again, if I'm wrong, of course, correct me. Sure. The resources are owned by all. Do you mean like, are you talking about like public areas, or are you talking about like, you know, the communist philosophy, like the state owns everything and we'll redistribute it? Or I was kind of unclear. Just explain your proposal.
I mean it in the sense that we are beings on the earth, born the same way, born with the same things, and we have a birthright by what, you know, I feel is God's birthright, that we are equal human beings on this earth, and all the resources were put here for our collective usage. So it's not, I don't think it's communism. I think it's Christianity to say that we all are equal and that we all own these resources together. And I understand that, you know, I'm all for rewarding action in a society, but when you have 10 houses and kids starving, I think we've went beyond reason in that particular scenario. So it doesn't really come down to an ism one way or the other. I mean, the ism is just what you call it. It's about sharing and loving one another and surviving as a species. So that's what I'm advocating for, because I think like that oligarchy, the corporate entities are just, and I'm not vilifying it, right? They do what they do. They're a legal entity that consumes, that makes as much capital as possible and passes to its shareholders. I mean, that has a function in our society, but it's certainly, they don't really do equality all that well. It's just a misapplication of the type of how you run a government business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. But how would, like, what could you do as governor, or what, you know, how would that be, like, solved? You know what I mean? Okay, there's a concentration of resources, and there's issues like, you know, well, maybe on the world level, that many people are starving to death, and maybe locally, you know, other issues like people are definitely living in poverty in some areas of West Virginia. But what would you do? You know, would it be more voluntary, or is there something like mandatory or to redistribute or what?
No, there's nobody has to do anything except be West Virginians, love West Virginia, and want to help West Virginia. We just talked about the root cause of most of our socioeconomic problems in West Virginia. It's just a terrible economy. So this is a plan it's an actual plan to fix it. I think what we could do is we need capital, and we, all of us good capitalists, know if you want capital, you need to capitalize resources. Well, since all the people own the resources in West Virginia, every citizen, and since private capital has left us high and dry for global monopolistic markets, I don't see any problem with creating a state bank, making all the citizens a shareholder in that state bank, funding that with the Federal Reserve's policy of quantitative easing, which does not add to the deficit, I might add. This gets capital into West Virginia that we could start using. We use that capital to restart the extraction industry. Now, I know that's not ideal. I'm not really a let's burn coal until all the birds die type of guy, but I am, we have to work with what we got. We have resources in the ground. I think we could start that extraction economy back up and use the revenues from that to invest in future West Virginia. I mean, we have infrastructure problems. We have losing our kids problems. I mean, there's brilliant ideas, and these kids have dreams, and we can't help them build their dreams in West Virginia, so they go other places to build those dreams. I mean, I really want to transition the economy out of extraction, using extraction, you know, and make, because we got plenty of coal and gas workers here who, you know, who could enjoy till retirement. While, like, they're doing that job while we're transitioning the economy, mm-hmm. and we help them transition to the new economy at the end, but hopefully they'll be retired and just take it.
So there's still some coal mines, correct me if I'm wrong. Are you saying they're, like, shutting down, or they should be a lot more? Or is it because of, like, one of the candidates was telling me earlier today that there's just another rule passed, like, by the federal or Biden administration, or is, yeah, about energy extraction. I didn't get the exact. It was making it harder yet to extract coal. So I guess what I'm saying is, what's stopping the coal extraction now? Is it these regulations that are like, oh, it was saying that I think coal had to burn cleaner than it is, or whatever, whatever.
Well, yeah, I'll get, first of all, it's the EPA, and they have no power unless specifically granted by the Constitution of the United States. And I do not remember seeing that the Constitution of the United States, that they could come to West Virginia and tell us what we can do in that regard. They don't specifically have it. I think it's a slam dunk legal issue. That's why I don't understand all the suits from West Virginia spending money, you know, trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. Seems like more grandstanding, but. So I would take that stance as governor. I mean, we can open those coal mines. We don't have to export at all. But I think a lot of private capital is left because there's not a ton of money in it, right? Especially when you need to make a profit. This is where it comes in handy for the people to capitalize their resources directly. We don't have a profit issue. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that, given the tight coal market and the restrictions, we could do it better if we do it that way.
Okay, fair enough. I'm still trying to understand, like, the public owning everything. So, I mean, I get that God created everything. I agree. And, you know, especially the environment and the natural resources. But how does that work vis-a-vis, like, if you have a coal mine, so that wouldn't be run by Joe's Coal Company or somebody's, or Justice's Coal Company, whatever, who would run it?
The people of West Virginia. I mean, we have the people who can run that. We have the people with the business knowledge, the coal mining knowledge. We're just capitalizing resources that private companies aren't interested in. I won't interfere. None of my policies are meant to interfere with existing native domestic West Virginia businesses already in extraction. They will be left alone and helped just like any other citizen. I'll support those. So the state bank is funding the capital, so they own all the equipment, which is the people, because the people are the shareholders of that state bank. So there's, 1.8 million people. So there's 1.8 million shares in the state bank, and everyone has one.
So that's, is that same or different from, like, a state-owned business or whatever you want to call it?
Well, how is it different than Amazon, where it's a concern that feeds money back to shareholders? That's all I'm suggesting, is we do the same thing.
Okay. I'm not sure. I may not completely grasp it. But anyway, so you were saying, like, the core issue is economic. So I don't know. I run a nonprofit. So, like, one thing I've been talking about many times is that since, like, in West Virginia, we have 47% of births outside of marriage. And then my premise is, when I, you know, talk about this issue, that this kind of, would call it family breakdown, or the fact that, you know, there's not stable families, husbands and wives raising children, that is at the root of, like, all the other issues, because then you see related issues like, you know, more drug use, or, you know, girls are more sexually active, and then they might want to have commit suicide more. And now we see all these young women are gender confused, you know, or whatever. A lot of those in my mind are related to the breakdown of the family. But yes, you're saying maybe, and again, correct me, of course, that no, it's more like an economic thing. Or could you want to comment on that?
No, I totally agree with your assessment. I agree that your cause is a cause of many causes. But as we come down to root cause, I'm thinking the terrible economic conditions are the driver. Like, we can't put a family back together if they're never together, right? Like, if the husband works 80 hours a week, right? We can't put a family back together if they can't feed their family, or if they're fighting because they can't buy groceries and pay the light bills. So I really think those two things go hand in hand, to be fair. I agree that the family is a critical unit in our society, humanity.
You know, it's interesting. Well, just as an aside, and you can comment on it, this makes me think of, like, I've had this idea, I haven't really actualized it, like in our neighborhood, I do some like neighborhood ministry stuff, like having like a neighborhood family council. So the idea would be, again, I haven't done it yet, so I can't give you a report on that. Okay, sure. You're concerned about your neighbors. So if someone's really struggling, you know, then you would look at it and say, okay, what can we do? Then you have X neighbors, you know, a couple hundred neighbors around here, whatever. Okay, yes. What can we do to help the situation? And there would be some stipulations. Obviously, if you're helping, you know, the Smith family, you would stipulate, well, no, this is not for buying beer or alcohol or drugs. That's, sure, you know, obviously.
Makes it worse.
But, you know, other things, that's fine. So then you would help one another. And so what I'm getting at is maybe the crucial thing is like the, I don't want to say break down a community, but sort of like we're not neighborly enough. It's like, hey, if my neighbor here is struggling, I should be concerned about that. Or anyway, what do you think?
I 100% agree. I mean, you can see it everywhere you go. I think there's a myriad of factors in there, but I think restoring that is critically important. Like, my philosophy of government is push it more local, local, local. The local people know the people around them. They know who needs help. They know how to help them in a great way. So, yeah, I want to foster that more. I think you're exactly right.
Yeah, I'm not sure how government could help. But I know in general, you know, it's something that's definitely, you know, needed. On that topic, what, if anything, should the government do regarding like strengthening families and that kind of issue, if anything?
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I think provide them opportunity to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Help them build their dreams. Like, don't put them in despair and with no hope, right? Like, give them an opportunity to feel like they're 100% a part of society, you know, not some outcast. I mean, I think that's critically important. I think that's critically important to helping those families.
What about the issue of election integrity? So do you, what would you do to ensure election integrity? A lot of people are concerned, and I think rightly so, about using, like, we've switched now since 2016, although it's up to each county, but at least in bigger counties like, or medium-sized counties like Jefferson County here, they've switched to using all voting machines, no paper ballots. And then they do print something on paper, but they use tabulators. I mean, I'm concerned about election integrity. You hear a lot of reports from states. I've heard from Arizona, you know, there's a lot of regularities in the tabulators. We've heard about the machines. We've probably heard of Antrim, Michigan, where somehow they switched from, you know, Republican to Democrat votes, thousands. And then they said, oh, it's just a mistake. And then machines were kicking out, I think it was Antrim County, like 67% of all ballots are being kicked out for adjudication, which of course is ripe for fraud. So in a short question is, what, if anything, would you do to ensure election integrity?
Well, I think all those things about the ballot is important, and we need to clean those up to give people faith in those processes. I don't have a particular one. I think all of them are error prone. in some way or the other, let's just pick the least one and do that well with skill. But the truth is, the election's over before you even cast a ballot. I mean, they have no integrity because of the corporate money that's in them. Mm. I mean, when you run for governor, the news tells you who the top four candidates. I mean, 2 weeks after we all filed, the news was already talking about the top four candidates, if you know what I mean, in the governor's race. And, you know, they invited me to debate Nexstar Media, WOWK, and said, oh, you can come debate if you collect $100,000. I mean, and I'm a no donation candidate. I think that democracy should be completely free. So, I mean, those things are decided. They just black you out. You can't get oxygen. It's hard to get your speech out. I mean, it's just not a sort of an equal platform that we all start. So, it's like running a race that those guys are halfway ahead, but you know, so the corporate money, right? They're just doing the way it's done. I'm not really ripping on any candidate personally. I think the underlying evil is the corporate money that's in our elections. That has to go altogether. I mean, corporations, I know the Supreme Court said they're real people, but if I can't give it a hug, it's not a real person and it shouldn't get to vote and give a bunch of money. That's my top priority. I think get that out of there. Open primaries, in my opinion, if the parties can't cut out this sowing division nonsense, then
open primaries in West Virginia? Like I'm registered independent, so I can ask for the Republican or Democrat ticket.
Yeah, you said the magic word there, or, right? So you should be able to vote in both primaries how you see fit. I mean, you have stakes in all of it. Like, there's candidates with meritable ideas on both sides of the aisle, and this forces you to kind of go one way or the other. I personally think it's anti-democratic. I'd like to see open primaries, merit-based ideas, all candidates get an equal exposure in the media, the same spread, and get the corporate money out of those things. I think if we fix that, our elections will be have a whole lot more integrity. And then we can, you know, deal with some, you know, ballot counting issues amongst some counties.
That's a good point. Money is a big factor. I'm following some of those different people online. One group was able to dig into the FEC database. They were able to, like, digest the whole thing and find out, you know, there was a lot of fraud going on where they said some, like, 90-year-old guy donated, you know, to 50 different people. But of course, he never did, and stuff like that. Yeah. A lot of dark money, like you're saying.
Yeah, they hide behind those PACs, like shell companies, right? That nobody owns them, nobody's responsible for it. It's nonsense. How can you have integrity when you can hide behind something? And why do you need to hide behind stuff if you have integrity?
Right. The good point. Yeah, cleaning up the system like that. What do you think about the Hope Scholarship Program? Are you familiar with that, the Hope Scholarship Program?
I am. So, you know, I see charter schools, Hope vouchers, all those things as sort of this. I think we're a free market country. And when something is not delivering the service for the investment, people seek other solutions. And private business has been there in charter schools to serve those needs. And I think as long as there's a demand for those, that I think if a parent wants to do it, we should support them. I mean, they're a citizen just like me. The problem is not the private companies coming in and taking customers. The problem is you have a bad product. So if we want a constitutional way to solve that problem, then we have to make our public schools markedly successful, right? So there's no demand for charter schools. Nobody wants to go to a voucher because your public schools are so awesome. And that's tied back to the bad economic conditions. That's in disrepair. I mean, it's just this cascade of suffering from a bad economy, through bad families, through unruly kids, to schools,
do you basically support the Hope Scholarship, having it as a choice?
Yes, I do.
That's good. So, yeah, I guess we're coming toward the close. Anything you'd like to talk about and differentiating yourself, if you want to, from your opponents more, and if you want to, and anything that you want to touch on or that we didn't discuss or that you just like to emphasize, you know, please go ahead.
But I think what really sets me apart, I mean, they all talk about where you have to have experience, but that doesn't make any sense. I mean, how do they know what we're going to face over the next 4 years? None of us have experience at that. As the things happen, we'll all experience them for the first time. So this, you got to have experience, is nonsense. It's a nonsense argument. I think I'm one of the two candidates, other than Mitch Roberts, I think I'm the only candidate who really is in it to improve the lives of West Virginians. I mean, my sole focus is to that purpose. Like, there's a couple ways you could, like, run the DHHR. You could be like my competitors who are kind of working for the corporations. If they take corporate money, they're going to do what those guys want them to do. I mean, that's part of the deal, right? Like, we're not naive. Like, if someone pays you, they expect something in return. And right, these guys have something in return to give them. I'm offering a total focus on people of West Virginia. My only allegiance, it's not to party, it's not to another candidate, it's solely to the people of West Virginia. Every decision I make will be that consideration. Is this the best for all citizens of West Virginia? I mean, I owe nobody anything. No favors, no cabinet positions, nothing. I think that's what a true leader needs to be in West Virginia. Somebody look out for us for once. I mean, you could, like, for over 70 years, they've been looking out for the corporations, and look what that got us. So, you know, I'm not bashing those guys. If you want West Virginia to stay the same as it is, as it's always been, vote for somebody besides me. If you want change, I mean, I'm that guy.
I think that gives a good idea for voters, you know, what your ideas are. I appreciate, you know, you're coming on today and taking the time, you know, to make time so people, and we're going to put this out on a audio podcast on the Rich Urban Show. It'll be on any, you know, podcast platform, or on video podcasts on our website, visionroot.org. So we'll definitely make it available.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Rich. I really appreciate it. I'm thankful for the opportunity. If anybody wants to know anything about me, www.kcforwv.org.
Okay, great. Absolutely great. All right. Thank you for coming on.